Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of Going Downhill. This is Wendy.
And I'm Shelley.
Hello, Shelley. How are you today?
Hello, Wendy. You know, just coming off a weekend, had some races this weekend, so that was good.
Some races? Mm-hmm. How did it go?
Well, the ladies, we had a gold medal, so that was nice, and a couple Woo-hoo! In the top 10, and a couple in the top 10 in the boys, but had a bronze. We had one of my gentleman racers, U16, decided to have a little bit of a fit on the hill, because he was winning the first run by 2 seconds, and then the second run just totally, afterwards I talked to him, just lost focus, and then decided, because he straddled in the last 5 gates, to throw his poles and then lie on the hill, beat it with his fist, swear a lot, which I could hear up the hill, and then ski away. To which the TD grabbed his poles, sat there, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go talk to the TD right now. So I just slid up to the TD, who I've known for a very long time. And he was like, oh, so Shelley, this was your athlete? And I said, yeah, it was. He's like, well, I was going to sanction him, but because I know that you're going to talk to him probably more than I ever could.
Yes, you could.
So I had a little discussion with him, a little bit about how to. And I also talked to his dad as well, who was also very... surprised. He said, usually he said he must get that from me, because I was like that as a kid, but usually that's his brother, not him.
Wow. Well, I'm sure you dealt with it in the Shelley way.
Yes, I did. I had an interesting chat with both of them. It was, yes, you know, these are the things. But a lot of people don't realize that the coach gets in trouble a lot of the time for the actions of the athletes. So that's when you have to like mitigate that right away. You're like, ooh, I'm going to get a talking to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it sounds like you did the right thing. Mm-hmm. So
there you go. So anyway, so you know what we have to do is we have to travel to Slovakia where we can win a crown.
We could indeed. Yes, we could. And somebody did.
Yes, somebody. And somebody didn't.
No, they didn't. So it's a pretty small hill.
Yeah, so it's that the resort is quite large. It's kind of Tremblant-sized, according to my sources. But the hill itself is, as it looks on TV, it's kind of flat, jogs to the right, to skiers right. And it's these races in particular, it was the surface that was more challenging than anything else. And I think that would have dictated the simpler sets, because if you throw in a little complicated sets, which we'll get into about Kitzbühel and how a surface and complications can lead to a lot of DNFs, I think that that's why the sets were as they were. Nothing too complicated.
No, not at all. But it was pretty hard snow, pretty icy conditions.
Very icy. I was told it was quote unquote a skating rink.
Okay, that's pretty icy. Mm-hmm. Now, at least that gives you something to have a bit more of a challenge. I didn't find this terrain to be challenging. They had like one knoll.
It's really not. It's a pretty simple, straightforward hill. Vlahova actually lives 13 kilometers away from here, so this is kind of her home turf. And, you know, there was 30,000 Slovakians that they're screaming their heads off. So a good turnout for the ladies.
Yeah, at least for 11 gates or so.
Well, for the other ones, though, I mean, it's still... They came out and supported the home team.
Yes, that is very true. Mm-hmm. So I think, there's not much they can do with that type of terrain, just because it's a very basic set. And I don't even know if they could have introduced more technical elements to it because of the terrain.
I mean, you can always have fun with your sets if you want, but I think the surface was more of a concern because it was so icy. If you set a lot of tricks and trucks, you're going to have a lot of DNFs and problems out there. And for the GS in particular, the course name is Lakova 2. You start altitude at 1650, you finish at 1250 meters, vertical drop of 400. Our first setter was Heini Fischer, I'm going to say, from Switzerland, 49 turning gates, 51 gates. Our second run was Norway, Andre Jermann. So there was 48 turning gates, 50 gates. And that's it. I mean, the temperature was pretty chilly at minus 12 at the start generally, and then minus 8 at the bottom. So pretty solid.
Well, the visibility was good, which was nice. Mm-hmm. Although it did seem like the course was in the shadow for most of the run.
Yeah, it definitely did. I think that that kind of contributed to a little bit of the difficulty. I mean, we had 69 competitors from 19 countries here, and the DNFs for the first run were 13. So it wasn't too bad. It was pretty standard.
Not too bad. Can we talk about one DNF in particular?
Yes, I think we should.
Okay. Vlahova.
Yes. A season ender for Vlahova.
Well, I think part of the problem is the snow, the ice, and the terrain being flatter. So kind of when you do make a mistake, like it looked to me like she got back a little bit twisted, and then just shot across the hill.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely, I don't think she got as back as we think. She definitely, you know, just got caught inside, and therefore, and then when the ski hooked up when she tried to recover, that's when it shot out, and that's when you saw that kind of, and it wasn't anything too dramatic. It was just one of those funky falls where it's awkward a little bit, and then when you saw the knee go back, especially in the slow-mo, you're like, that's, not so hot. So, I mean, she ended up in the fence a little bit, just her ski hooked up in there, but by that point, you know, it's unfortunate. It's an ACL tear, as far as I understand.
Yeah, and it is harder, I think, sometimes on those flats. Sometimes the crashes on there have more of an outcome, negative outcome, than if you fall on a pitch where you can just kind of roll away.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of her home turf, so I don't think it was the terrain. She would have known this extremely well. I think it was probably the surface being aggressive as it was, and just a mistake, a simple mistake.
Well, that certainly opens the door for some others.
Indeed, and it did.
it did. Yes, it did.
I think that this hill was interesting. We're going to start off with just naming the podium. We'll start off with third place, which was Alice Robinson.
So, New Zealand. I'm so excited to see her back on the podium. She did get second in Jasna in 2021.
I think this course plays to her strength. And I think that given first place as well, we've talked about these people being very aggressive, very hard on their edges. And I think that the skating rink definitely played to their advantage in their style of skiing, let alone the flat aspects and lack of terrain on this course.
Fully agree with you. Powerhouses, right? She's a powerhouse skier, and this suited that style. So congrats to Alice getting back on the podium in third.
Yeah, you can risk the line a little bit more here if you can dig in, and that kind of bull in a china shop definitely works.
Yeah. Yes, that's how I play soccer too. Second place, 1.5 seconds back.
Yeah.
From the winner.
Schifrin.
1.5 seconds. Schifrin. And I think this isn't her style, of course. No. I think she's better on the more challenging courses, maybe with more terrain changes and quickness, and not the speedway, if you can call it that.
I agree with you, but it's also a funny observation given that she wins almost everything. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like to be like, oh, she's better at this, but at the same time, oh, she's usually winning by the second and a half, not back a second and a half. Like, you have to kind of consider.
I know, it did sound weird coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, in kind of the context of Schifrin being such an exception, I agree with you. However, if it were just any other skier, you would say something, I think, a little bit different.
I would, but I didn't.
It is the shift.
It is the shift. That's like Schiffler, Stifler. We don't want to go there. So 1.5 seconds back. So winner from Sweden, Sarah Hector.
I'm really happy about this one. As I've said, I've said I really like her style of skiing because it appeals to my personality, right? So
poor kid that you had to reprimand. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
So she won the first run by a second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she really, her line was just really on, and just her style of skiing being such a powerhouse, really strong, moving down the hill, no tricks or bobbles on the terrain to really catch her up. I think that, and really just a steady rhythm. Like, I felt like this was almost like one of those corridor training courses I would set, but just longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Fully agree with you. You get into that rhythm and you just stay in that rhythm. She won both runs, but this is her first win in almost 2 years.
Yeah.
And man, that was a win.
Yeah, I think she deserves it. I mean, she's been popping into that top 10, top 15 consistently. And it was her time. I'm happy for Sarah. Good for you.
And that was her fifth GS win. So So, you know, pretty stoked for her. Our Canadian gal, Val Grenier, 11th.
Yep.
She had, you know, not bad, no major mistakes. She had a, you know, a couple runs where, or turns where she could have been a little bit cleaner, I feel, and more in the rhythm of the course. Because if you get off even a little bit, you got to fight to get back in that rhythm and line again.
Well, also when you have a surface that's unforgiving, that's when you're going to have problems, right? Because if you dump in a little bit too early or anything, you lose that little bit of purchase. It just has to be outside ski to outside ski in that corridor fashion and just that consistency. And as soon as you start to push the line or push something too much, that's when you can run into that little bit of trouble and end up that little inside where you have to recover that line. And that's where Sarah won by a second and a half. She just treated it with no respect and just that rhythm that was required.
From Canada, Sarah Bennett didn't qualify, and neither did Cassidy Gray, which is unfortunate.
Yes.
And not finishing the first run was Britt Richardson.
Yeah.
So bummer for those guys.
Yep. So, I mean, the second run of the first run sets, I didn't really see, there wasn't anything really surprising in either set. So again, like, this was just a straight up really regular race to me. It was just something that, aside from Vlahova and a couple of people really not, you know, just making mistakes here and there, like little bips and bobbles, there wasn't really anything extremely notable except for, you know, the unfortunate aspect of Vlahova's fall.
Well, if you were 7 seconds out, you were still in the top 20.
Yeah.
Seven seconds, we could have gone in there.
You could have gone in there.
Whatever.
I don't know what you after side slipping courses this weekend. My knee is so sore.
I thought you were going to say bringing up Schladming, side slipping
Schladming. Oh, no. We can bring that up when we're talking to the men. No, we can bring that up.
No problem. Okay. Moving on. Mm-hmm. All right. Shall we move on to the slalom for the ladies?
We can. And I mean, obviously, I mean, we always talk about the Shiffrin-Vlahova show, and that's not going to happen for the rest of the season. So it'll be interesting to see what does actually happen. And I have to say, Croatia, okay, well, we'll start again. Sweden having an extremely good weekend.
Right. And who is in third?
Mm-hmm.
Our winner from the GS.
Mm-hmm. No, Sarah, it wasn't.
Oh, no. Wait, hold on.
Same country, different person. They're not all the same, Wendy.
No, they're not. We're good.
Anna Sven Larsson from Sweden. Fifth fastest time for run one. Second fastest time run two. Again, like, this set wasn't super... The first run set, not really any tricks, anything. Again, you don't have the terrain there. I think the sets were pretty conservative. And these were just straight up races. They just followed the rules and went with what they went with.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the way it went.
Mm-hmm. The first, actually, so our first run setter was Canada, Francis Royale. He's a Quebecois, sir, who I've worked beside. Super nice guy. So I'm really happy that he had his set. I think it was his first World Cup set, too. So good for him. Solid. Good course set.
Perfect.
Yep.
That'd be an easy course report. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sunny and clear. Again, the snow was firm and icy. That's for sure. I found that because there's not a lot of terrain, what I noticed about the course is that they're really tightly set, like a very quick rhythm and tempo, and not a lot of room vertically between the gates.
I don't know if I completely agree with that. I mean, I think it was pretty typical slalom. I mean, the offset was maybe a little further, but I didn't think that there was anything particularly tricky about this for a World Cup set.
No, I'm not saying tricky. I'm just saying a quicker tempo, it seemed to be.
Well, it's 66 turning gates and 68 gates. The run is 200 meters, so it's within the rules, and the rules kind of dictate how many gates you can have per vertical drop. So it's I don't know if I agree with that.
It doesn't matter if you agree with me or not. It's okay to have a difference of opinion.
Yeah, we all know I'm right.
Whatever.
No, the quick tempo of the feet compared to some of the other races, are you talking about? Like, I don't know. I think maybe because it was a little more rhythmical and easier to see because of the lack of terrain, I think that the set was pretty standard.
Fair enough.
So.
I appreciate your input.
we'll fight over this later.
Right. In the bloopers at the end.
Exactly. And then second set was Austria, Alexander Berthold, I'm going to say. And again, 66 gates, 68. Well, 66 turning gates, 68 gates.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, it was one too many gates for Amelia Smart. She didn't qualify. Mm-hmm. So that's too bad.
One too many gates. I was a little sad that Laura Kulturi went out and she just had like typical mistake, went inside out.
You know what? I mean, people are kind of dissing her mom for allowing her to race World Cup at 17, and it was created quite the controversy. Let them fly. Let them fly.
Well, that's from your perspective, because you were like 16 when you were on the World Cup. But I mean, I think that I agree with you. I think it's up to the family and if the racers do feel that way. I mean, I understand they're not of the age majority and they can't vote. But I mean, when you're 16, you do have a say of what you want to do and what you don't. I also think that, did people say this about Gut when she was 16 and 17?
Not that I recall.
And I think Schifrin was like 8. Schifrin was like 18.
She was young too. Yeah.
She was like 18 or 19 when she was on the. So I mean, like this. Yeah. So this does happen. You know, you get these Wunderkinds occasionally that just pop onto the circuit and do quite well and are very consistent. I don't see the controversy in this. This is not, it's not like it's gymnastics and they're like 10 or 11, 12, 13, you know,
just done by 14.
Yeah. Like, I mean, well, obviously the rules have changed since then, but like, it's like, you know what I mean? I don't think this has the same controversial elements. These people usually are extremely well-funded. I mean, Lara Gut has an amazing education if you speak with her. And a lot of these young women and are being well-educated. It's not like they're being left behind. In this way. So long as you're taking a stepped approach where it's an even and you're not putting them at a disadvantage, I don't really see anything wrong with this. If you're looking at injury rates for this type of athlete at this type of level, I mean the same risk is at FIS and SIT as well. Whenever you're racing, there's no such thing as a safe race necessarily. So I don't see this being an issue, honestly.
It's not to us.
No. But some yummy mummy out there is crying, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Whatever.
Yeah. So, whatever. That's not even whatever. Just
whatever.
Parents.
Okay. Anyway, back to the race.
Mm-hmm. So Croatia, Zrinka Lucic, second place, second fastest run, run one, and fourth fastest run two. Gave her the silver. Good on her.
That's right. And only 0.14 out.
Yes, I know. And she's got to be really, you know, really happy and ecstatic to come that close to Schifrin. So.
Oh, yeah. So it was Schifrin's race to lose. And Drinka just had a smoking second run and really moved up and pushed that closeness right in the time.
Well, the Schiff second run was seventh. She had the seventh fastest time. So, like, you know, obviously top 10, but for Schifrin, when you're used to like 1-2 or 2-1 or 1-3, like those top five, that's a little bit out for her, honestly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was, speaking of the Schiff, so that was her 95th win.
Jesus. So it really is amazing. Like, just, all respect to her. And in her speech, she did give props to the person, the big, quote-unquote, big person that was missing, and that was Blahova, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and the crowd loved it, and the energy of the crowd, like, cheering on their own was, you could hear it, and it was quite amazing. So, good to the people, Yasno.
Like, she is. She's very personable. Mm-hmm. So, she also won the World Cups here on the last two occasions. She did win in 2016, that was a while ago, and 2021, when it was last hosted there. So,
And you do win that really cool crown, so I like the trophy.
It's huge. Person. It's like four feet tall.
It's taller than you.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to report on the ladies' side of things?
Just that Schifrin has already tied the Ingemar Stenmark. Both had 81 wins in the slalom, and now she's got 82.
Yeah, that's impressive. So.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our lovely men's?
Right after I tell you how Lawrence Saint-Germain did, she came 22nd in the race. Not bad, you know, some little you know, not as clean as she could be. And Ali Newmar, 25th in that race.
You think by now I would remember that you're going to go over all the Canadians?
Yeah, you'd think if it's a Canadian podcast, you might think about that. And did we even mention
who I'm an international woman, Wendy.
Clearly international superstar. But did you, Miss Superstar, mention Anna Sven Larsson coming in third?
Yes. Think you did. Yeah, you we did. At the very top, we mentioned that. And how Sweden had a very good weekend.
Fine. Did you know Schifrin has had now had 150 World Cup podiums?
I thought it was 152 now, I think it is.
Well, we kind of need to back up a little bit and talk about the night slalom from Fleckau in Austria.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot.
Yeah, that's where I was going with my initial talks about the slalom. Is that
right? Right, right. Yeah.
Fleckau. So let's mention that real quick, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I know you're a woman of the world, but let's bring that up. So that's where we're going to bring up Laura Kalturi again.
The yes.
17-year-old from Albania. She started number 60th and finished 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So let her fly, people. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Yeah. There's nothing like taking a winning athlete and then clipping their wings.
Yes.
Because of her age when everybody involved is a consenting party. Totally. That's makes sense.
Fully agree. But I also like the young gal from Latvia. She started mm-hmm. number 50 and finished 8th. 8th. Zennefera. I think it's like
why? Her. Now, why do you think that all of these later bibs were popping in there?
Well, I think because, a lot of, first of all, it's a night slalom, so the atmosphere is amazing. So yes. That had to get them pumped up. I feel that might be part of it. But the race itself, I think it had pretty decent pitch at the top, mm-hmm. A little tricky hairpin. So if you have to get the line in your brain properly, good balance, it swings across the hill. So really, I think using the terrain when you do your inspection is the best possible thing for these girls.
Absolutely, I agree. And I do think that the tempo of this slalom kind of matched Jasna. I don't think that the tempo was that much lower. I think that the terrain in some of the combinations made it seem a little bit different. But I think that the tempo just if in the rhythmical sections was pretty apt.
Fair enough. I agree. Yes, it does. It wasn't snowing or rain or anything at night, so that was really nice. The crowd was out.
What a nice surprise for once.
Yay! But it's quite a small place. They only have like 2,800 people that live there. They're probably all out cheering.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Right? I guess that's not too many. But the results. So Sarah Hector, that's where I was going. So she was third in this race.
Mm-hmm. She's obviously had that confidence and put it into Jasna as well.
Exactly. So that's a carryover. Second place, Flahova.
Mm-hmm.
She was in first after the first run, ended up 0.27 out. And she had a little bit of a crazy run. She was like wild out of the top, like almost out of balance, out of like survival mode.
Not her usual calm self. No.
No.
Usually she's powerful but precise. And in this one, she was a little bit, I don't know, like... A little bit, yeah, again, like kind of that wild, not out of control. She's never really out of control. But
it was, yeah, she was giving her.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for her, Schifrin did come out on top for that one. But Schifrin was 8 tenths out after the first run. Mm-hmm. That's a lot for Schifrin to be behind Blahova. That's yep. for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Yeah, that's about it. I am going to talk about the Canadians right now.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Here we go. Canadian Amelia Smart. So she was in 20th. She did go a little bit straight out of the start and kind of had to, you know, get her rhythm back in, but she fixed it. But she did make little mistakes all the way down. She made like 4 pretty decent mistakes that are going to cost her time. So I was actually pleasantly surprised to still find her in the 20th spot. Ali Newmar did not finish the second run. So she got back in a hairpin and then Auskasheed.
Out.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when she came into that, I think the error that she made was 2 gates above and then coming into that hairpin too straight. She was trying to, yeah. I think she was trying yeah. to make up for mistakes or just yeah. had that little bit of a late line, tried to run it straight and just, get Auskasheden.
Auskasheden. Yep.
Mein Deutsch okay. ist nicht sehr gut, ja.
Ja, sehr gut. Okay.
All right. Well, before can we talk about the men?
Yeah.
All right. So before we talk about the men, we'd like to thank our sponsors. Helly Hansen for helping outfit us. Freshwater yes. Distillery for helping us drink.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Yes. And of course, Vogel Parker and Del Bello for the lovely fast skis and amazing equipment.
Thank you so much.
Yay. No. So now we head over to the men.
Kitzbühel.
Kitzbühel, the legendary Red Bull Kitzbühel, the strife.
The rooster's comb. that didn't sound so impressive.
No, it really didn't. We need one of those trailer guy voices.
Oh, yeah.
In a land far, far away, we have an Austrian race that no one has ever seen before.
Okay, that was totally Star Wars.
Well, fine.
I was thinking more like, and now in Kitzbühel, Austria. How's that?
Is this like a horror movie?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Thank you. Nailed it.
Okay. I'm thinking action. You're thinking horror. Should we go rom-com next?
That could be arranged. Christofferson just got engaged. So
oh, that is go. True. Yeah, that is.
Yeah. Done. We've covered it all.
They met at Kitzbühel. Big city girl meets country racer boy.
Oh my god. I'll find some actors for it. We're set. So this is one of the classics, obviously. It's got everything, steeps, flats, turns, 50,000 people, crowd cheering.
Well, you know, you're going from 0 to 100 within the first 3 seconds, which is, and then you have this like massive, like right footer turn.
That's the third gate of the whole course. The Wake up, everybody.
I mean, yeah. So what is your favorite? Do you like Kitzbühel or Wengen? What's your favorite? Because they're both extremely old and very, very technical courses.
For some reason, I don't know why, I thought Kitzbühel, maybe the course is maintained really well. But to me, I actually thought Wengen had a more challenging course than Kitzbühel.
So I always like Wengen over Kitzbühel. And yeah. I know I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this. Don't bother writing. I get it. But I think Wengen, to me, I like the technicalities of it a little bit better. I mean, everybody respects the strife for what it does, but the longest downhill on the circuit, to me, is also just that, like, the adrenaline leg burner as well. The flat parts are just as tiring. They just don't look as spectacular. I have to say, the one thing for Kitzbühel that I always enjoy is watching the lines coming over that really...
Underneath the banner?
Yeah, underneath the banner. And then that, like, coming across the side hill there is always really interesting before the finish. And I love, like, the Mausfjall, obviously, you know, the historic aspects. But I don't know, there's something about Wengen and, you know, coming into that canyon in that narrow section that I prefer. So... Anyway, but we'll talk about the strife because, you know, its start altitude is 1,665 meters, finish altitude is 805, vertical drop is 860 meters. It is 3.3 kilometers long, and it's obviously called the strife, strife. So it's like this is such a dangerous course because there is so much vertical and so much speed.
Well, unfortunately, some of our Canadians have had a bad go in that course. And that was, of course, Brian Stemmel in 1989. It was a very, very scary crash. Todd Brooker in 1987, out cold. I don't think I've seen that before, but he hit his head on the base of a gate and crumpled all over.
You've never seen that fall?
Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, wait, Brian's or Todd's?
Todd's.
I've seen both. Oh, yeah.
I've seen both, and both are really, really ugly. I think, is it Todd that will never watch his, or Stemmel?
I think it's Todd.
Yeah. It's a really bad fall. I remember seeing it as a kid, actually, and just, you know, just the tomahawking down the hill.
Oh, my
just
God.
Lucky to survive, that boy. Lucky.
No, but we did have some winners in the past in Kitzbühel. We had Ken Reed win in it in 1980. Podborski in 81, Podborski in 82, and Todd Brooker actually won it in 1983, 4 years prior to his crash. Yeah. But we also had Eric Gay on the podium in 2013 in second.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a history here, so it's, you know, it's always you can always perceive that we can pop in there at any point.
Exactly. Now, they do have what some of the athletes are saying is there's all the races, but when you finish Kitzbühel for the first time ever, they're saying that's when you become a man.
Yeah, and you do see the field kind of usually drop off a little bit coming into this because it is scary and it is well known for taking the rookies out of the game per se. So, I mean, we have our favorites for this one. Obviously, Odermatt's on fire. You know, he was definitely a favorite to win. Sarrazin, the Frenchman, just again, like the tech ability to turn that ski and just the confidence that he has coming into it. Kreckmeyer has done historically very well here. Austria getting the home team cheer, great. Paris, big dude, lots of speed, loves the scary elements, just loves the scarier courses in general. Goes with his metal attitude. Schreider, you know, he's podiumed here last year on the Strife, so obviously he's a contender. And Cam Alexander's been doing very well for our Canadians, so I don't like he, so he was also up there on my list.
Yeah, I agree with your compiled list. I think all of those are contenders. And who doesn't want to go 140 kilometers an hour in a downhill? So, you know.
You don't, I don't. They do.
Yeah, I'm good going that in my car or on my motorbike. It's totally fine. So, I'd like to talk about Cameron Alexander. So he, let's see, he started in fourth. He was total 0.46 out, but he's only 0.12 out from third place. It was very close. He ended up in fifth, but
He
I
had a
did
great
enjoy.
run.
He did that first big jump. He was so composed in the air. He is nice and quiet, like we've talked about before. His body positioning was totally forward. He was aggressive, but there's an aggressive and too hard on the ski, and there's an aggressive and a light touch on the ski. And I thought he matched the two up really well.
Yeah, he definitely had a very good balance. His line, I think, was the first, like, I mean, bib being bib four, the first three guys came down, but his line was just so much better than the three preceding him. And just the confidence coming into it, you could see that there was something that just kind of lit in his head that gave him the ability to just kind of flow more with the hill. His jumps were really clean, generally.
Oh, I thought he had a very good run. He started Kitzbühel 5 times prior, so this was the sixth time. His best result was last year when he was sixth. So he bumped up a spot to fifth, but I think he did a really good job of skiing that race.
Yeah, and being only, you know, half a second pouring 0.46 back from the podium, great. Absolutely
Well,
fantastic.
poor point 0.46 out. He was only, yes, from the podium.
From
He was
first, really.
only 0.12 from third.
I know. Yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, from United States, Ryan Cochran Siegel just slipped in there with 0.35. So he was 0.01 off of the podium.
I'd rather be 0.12.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, Odermatt, just again, like just third place, just really great. He came down and, you know, I thought he kind of clinched it. He by far had, I thought at that point he did have the best line. You know, he just that quiet, stable upper body that he's known for. He made a few little wider turns in some of the runs, but I mean, that was, I thought he was going to be a shoo-in, but
Okay,
I
I'm
didn't.
gonna agree with you on his line and his turning abilities, but his airtime, nicht so good. Open wide, and then over the other knolls, it's like when he gets light, he opens up and catches that air in the chest. He ended up 0.34 out from the winner, but he's got to clean that shit up. He's got to get
Well,
better in the air.
I mean, the question is, he's obviously cleaned that shit up for a lot of his other races. Maybe he was just having an off day.
Yeah, he could have been, but you don't want to be off day going over big jumps, man. So maybe he can clean that up for the second race. I guess we'll see.
You think I'm a bad mean? Well, you think I'm a mean coach? Jesus, Wendy. I mean, I agree with you that he needs to clinch it up in the air, but like, wow. Can you imagine having Coach Wendy at yourself? And like, yeah. Hey, you're like, what you're. Yeah. Hey, you're doing really well overall, but like, clean that shit up.
Right. Anyway, just my humble opinion.
So, yeah, and yeah. And we had Florian Scheider like pop in there from Italy. 0.05 off of the leader.
Yeah, where the heck did he come from all of a sudden?
I wouldn't say it's all of a sudden. Like, he seems to have done well here last year. I mean, he was in second place. He was 0.23 back from the leader, who was Krankmeier, who won it last year. So yeah. I would say that 0.05, he's improving.
Yes, he was. He just hasn't been up there. Like, well, it's hard when you've got the names, right?
Yeah, not this year. Like, he definitely has not been on the podium. But yeah, apparently he's good with the scary, fast technical stuff, I guess.
Well, and his upper body was so stable, and he was so composed when he was coming down. But his body was also in the attacking mode. Mm-hmm. So you get that from confidence. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he came second, 0.05 out. Good for Italy.
Yep, and our Frenchman, Cyprien Sarrazin. I don't know what to say about this dude. He's his confidence, his attitude, everything towards racing. Like, he's just winning. He's the winningest.
He is the winningest. So yeah, and he's been pushing Odermatt. They've had some pretty good dualies, I'd say.
Yeah, I would say so as well. And it doesn't happen all that often where you get that in speed per se. It's definitely very interesting. And being, you know, it's a 1:55, 0.75.
Yeah.
Just and 0.05 off. So that was a close one for him compared to the next day.
Well, you know where I think he lost his time is off that first jump. He opened up
a
so
little bit,
long,
yeah,
and landed on his tails.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, oh God, he's gonna blow his knee. But after that, he definitely got into it, and he has an amazing tuck. Did you notice? He's so squished in there.
You know what? It's not only the amazing tuck, but it's also the mental fortitude to come back after screwing up the very beginning. Like, just to kind of put that behind you and refocus on what's happening. Like, that does take quite a lot to be able to do that.
Yeah. And Cyprien has won a couple of downhills already this year. Bormio and Bengen. Oh, Bengen, yeah. Super G.
Oh, no, he's doing extremely well. I mean, like, I think since Bormio, it's just his confidence, really. Like, I think it's mostly, I mean, as they say in high performance, it's usually 10% physical, 90% mental. And I think that's the case for Cyprien here.
Well, he has become the first Frenchman to win multiple downhill World Cup events in a single season since Antoine de Nerea, something like that, from 2002.
Oh, I miss you butchering names so badly.
Oh, my God. I got to get going with my French again. So, mm-hmm. And Sarrazin, he has finished on the podium in 4 out of his last 5 World Cup starts. Mm-hmm. First, DNF. Second, first, second.
Yep. Yeah, he's definitely there. I mean, is he going to push for the overall is the question.
Well, he could. Uh-huh. Last year in the Strife, he was 10th. So he's come a lot of, well, I mean, it's so close in times, but 10th last year, and now he gets a win.
Yeah, he's not a stranger. Absolutely not a stranger to this stuff. So good on him. And then we have, or do you have anything else to say about our Canadians, Wendy, before we move on?
Well, not anything else. I would like to talk about our Canadians. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. In 51st was Brody Seeger. He got open off the very first jump, and he got a little bit crooked. That can get in your brain, I think, a little bit. Kind of pull it together again. But he was already so far behind, it just got exacerbated the further down he went. And then he had the wrong line underneath that big banner jump.
Yes.
Wrong line. So that's going to screw you up for the traverse across the bottom. So he finished in 51st. Jeffrey Reed, pretty good. He got in the points, started number 54. And that was his 8th start now at Kitzbühel. He did get held back in the start, which always sucks. Mm-hmm. Right? So he did have a hold before he could go down. So to come in the 27th, top 30, that's pretty good coming in 54th. James Crawford had a little bit higher expectations for him, but he just started to lose it about halfway down. He was in the hunt till halfway down and then just skidded a turn, had the poof of snow. He ended up 23rd, still in the points, but not what we expect from James Crawford. But I want to talk about number 53.
Yes.
So number 53 got flagged in his first run. Okay. He got flagged. Do you know why he got flagged? Because number 52 finished.
No.
Do you know why he got flagged? A course worker fell into the netting and had to get dug out. So, poor guy. He was halfway down. He was only 0.14 out when he got flagged. That was 37 seconds in. He was only 0.14 out.
That's soul crushing.
Oh, my God.
I was so mad.
Oh, my God. So, the poor guy got flown back up to the top, the start. They usually slot them in when they're comfortable to go back in.
Yeah.
So because of the long hold, he actually got back in to go after number 56. So it was really only three racers later. But I'd be pissed too.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was pissed because he actually ended up in ninth place.
Yeah.
So, you know, he...
Good on him. Did he didn't throw his poles like my athlete, though.
He did not throw his poles. No, he didn't. So, kudos to that guy to hold your brain together. Remember, he's tired. He already got, like, a third of the way down that course.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, we'll say his name, Arnaud Boisset from Switzerland. That's so, right. Yeah. And he's, you know, a second back in general. So, I look great. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. He is, he was born in 98, so he's not, he's been on the circuit, but definitely a really good result for him, and hopefully we'll see him come forward with that.
Oh, a breakthrough. Now, I also have to talk about number two, Daniel Hemmetsberger.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so he got pushed low in a skinny section of the course.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up on the netting. Like,
yes.
Thank God there's a slip skirt banner.
Yes.
His ski and shoulder were right on there.
Yes. I was like, wow, that's going to leave a little mark on the skin suit for sure. The one thing that I have to say for that in particular is they have changed the netting in those sections in Wengen and in Kitzbühel because of the fact they recognize and they don't want any boot buckles catching or anything else. So they do put a different type of netting up there.
Well, a lot of that came from Brian Stemmel.
Yes. So and Stem, he pushed hard for that and for the safety of that as well. Like because he caught the fence and that's what tore him in half.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you, Brian. You saved Daniel Hemmetsberger from a whole lot of hurt. And he was going 91 kilometers an hour when he slid along that netting.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe he hit his hand in the snow before, got twisted back. That's what pushed him low into the netting. And then, wow, thank God for that banner there. He just skimmed right along, is able to bounce off, got in his tuck and kept on going. But I think his heart might have been in his mouth.
My heart was in my mouth watching it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's pretty scary. So some news is that Thomas Dressen retired. So he did win Kitzbühel in 2018. But he's just said his body just can't keep up with the demand. And so he did retire.
Yeah, he's had a few injuries. And last year, I think also his injuries were kind of haunting him a little bit. And he's been in a bit of pain. So I think that was one of the reasons as well. Just consistent pain from past injury.
Yeah, fully agree. One thing I did like that they did make an adjustment on was the very bottom of the course. They used to have quite a big bump.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. They brought it down. And I think they did that also because they had that near death experience of one of the athletes who caught wind off of that.
Yeah.
And what it does is just reduces the risk of having any sudden gusts come up and take the racers out.
Yeah.
I mean, they are traveling at like potentially 120 to 140 kilometers an hour at that point.
Yeah,
so any type of wind gust coming up from a jump there is going to be slightly dangerous or more than slightly dangerous.
Yeah, I'd say more than. Mm. But Cyprian's going home with €100,000 for that win.
Well, he's going to go home with €200,000 because he won the next day too.
Okay, let's talk about that, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Okay, let's go over to day two, Kitzbühel, downhill.
Okay, I mean, our podium, really not a shocker. Paris, one of our favorites, third place, love him. Odermatt, second. And then Cyprian again, and double wins. I'm just going to say this before we go into third. Or do you want to go into third place first?
Just you keep on talking. You're on a flow. You carry on.
So Cyprian, he's one of the only people to win two times in a row here, back to back in the weekend. And I think the last time it happened, I think it was 2001 or something. It was definitely early 2000s. So, and, you know, as the Frenchman making history anyway, prior to with the downhills, I would have to say, like, kudos. But he murdered this by a second.
Yeah, he really did. And he did get twisted off the first jump. That was kind of scary because, like you said, in 3 seconds, you're going 100 kilometers an hour.
He's not learning off that first jump. He didn't learn from day one to day two.
Clean that shit up, Cyprian. Clean that shit up.
Yeah, you need Wendy coaching you. That's yeah, she's got some good advice. Just do it better.
So Luc Alphand did win this in 1997, and I believe he was in the crowd watching as well. So that would have been exciting for the French to see this double win.
Yeah, well, you'd have to go for, and I mean, Odermatt coming a second behind just didn't have the line.
A second behind. That is quite the win by Cyprian.
Yeah, I think that Cyprian definitely was tighter, obviously, cleaner and a little more supple on his edges. Odermatt just came in there and just had it, like, just wasn't as clean, got a little late in the midsections, and I just didn't have the speed.
Well, to me, he did clean his shit up in the air. He was much better.
Did you give him a phone call that night?
I did. I'm like, dude, reminder. Yeah. So he did get pushed low in the upper turns, but because he's such a technician, he can carry that speed cleanly through those turns. And he did barely make a gate at the bottom in that traverse. Mm-hmm. I wish they put the gate 2 feet lower, maybe.
No, because that's the point of the gate, is that it's hard.
Well, there didn't used to be a gate there. It used to be wide open space, right? So it didn't matter where you went on there, but they put in this gate. It did cause some people some problems. We'll get to that after. Mm-hmm. But Odermatt, he did, of course, make it through and ended up in second.
Yeah, and Dominic Paris, just, he's the big dude from Italy, comes down. He's got a ton of experience in this. I mean, I think he's won this in the past, hasn't he?
He's
quite a few wins. It's 2013, 2017, 2019.
So
I mean, he's no stranger to this hill. He has said that he likes this course because it is scary.
When you listen to Rise the Voltage, man, you can take anything.
So I mean, he came down, his line was a little off, but he had the top speeds coming into a lot of sections, so he definitely was his tuck and just his size, just care, that mass just coming down the hill. It's all the pasta.
And he was, And he was very good off that first jump. He pre-jumped it. There's always a risk in pre-jumping. You don't want to mistime that. So he was beautiful off that first jump. He did pre-jump it, landed nice and quietly. He did have a nice high line at the bottom. I was thinking, is that too high? Mm-mm. I don't know. But it wasn't. It's beautiful, and he held it.
I think that when you have that high line coming into that bottom, I think it actually works to your advantage because you're going to have more speed coming down because you're kind of diving down at that point. So long as you can nail the line and you're clean on your edges with that high line, then it gives you more room and the ability to propel yourself at the top of that pitch and then really just nail it and have more time in that tuck.
That's totally true. He was sixth yesterday. Obviously, he wants to get back up there on that podium. But it's hard to celebrate. He started number 11, and although Odermatt was 7, Cyprian started 8, you're in 11th, but you're in 3rd, but you're 1.44 behind. That's a big window for some other people to sneak in there. So it's hard for him to celebrate that 3rd place when you're like, it's possible for someone else to sneak in there.
Well, especially considering you look at the bibs that came behind. This was a crazy one for attacks from the back.
Let's talk about the Canadians.
Yes, so, of course.
Cam Alexander. Oh, Shelley. So he started number 17. He was 5th yesterday. He would have had that confidence coming in. He was very good off the first jump, but he did get bounced low and ended up super low coming into the carousel. Big puffs of smoke, big puffs of snow.
Coming from his ears.
That's what I was going to say. Coming into the flatter section. So he did lose time on the bottom, and that what was reflected in this 24th place. James Crawford, again, 27th place. He got his hand in the snow, getting inside, puffs of snow, again, slowed down in that section, which out the bottom on the flats isn't going to...
Piece of advice, don't put your hand in the snow at 100 kilometers an hour. Or just don't put your hand in the snow. It's not fast.
Yeah, I concur. Brody Seager, he popped in starting 39 with a 28, so he got some points. But off that first jump, I thought he was going to blow his knees. He landed so hard.
No. Just the slap.
That hurt me.
No kitty cat there.
no kitty cat at all. That's the elephant. I got to talk about Jeffrey Reed.
Yep.
He didn't finish. Bummer. However, with only how many gates left? 1, 2, 3, or 4 gates left. He was only 0.84 out. That is a podium, folks. That is what? Second place.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened is he came around the corner, coming into that traverse, and it's bumpy as F going across there. It's bumpy. It's hard snow. He got bumped around. He got bumped, I guess, to the inside, was on his hip and slid. He was able to get back to his feet, but he missed that little gate that if it was 2 more feet lower, he could have made it maybe. But you can't fight to make that. You'd break your body. And unfortunately, he did miss that gate. But he was in second place.
Yeah.
Starting 52.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very sad. I mean, it's just, it is what it is. Wendy just had to ride the outside ski, not the inside one.
If it's possible, those skis, they're just whamming and bamming all over the place.
I mean, you're so into going and phoning Odermatt about him opening up in the air, but you can't go and call Jeffrey Reed about getting on his hip.
I will give him a call right after this conversation. Very important that I pass it on to his coaches, John Kuchera, to, pass that along. Just a little tip from the Lumbinator. So Terminator was in the crowd.
Yes, he was.
To Jeffrey Reed's. So, anyway, bummer. But Attack from the Back, that same fella who came ninth, he started 51st today and then finished in 20th. So he's liking this Kitzbühel.
Yeah, Arnaud Poisson, that's true. And I mean, if you look at just the numbers in general, I mean, 36 came in 7th, 38th came in 11th, 34 came in 12th, 41st came in 13th. There was a couple ties for 13th. 33rd came in 17th. You know, like, it's just, there was a lot. 39th came in 28th. That was Seeger, right? So it's just, it's impressive. It's really impressive. And this is one of those things where kind of counts when you have the balls. You have to be ballsy, and you have to know your lines. Again, it's cleaning up these little things, but Kitzbühel is great for that, I think. The ability for, you just don't know what's going to happen.
You just don't know. And that also brings us to the slalom. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Oh my God, the slalom. So the team captains meeting the night before, do you know what they said?
I do not know. I was not there. What did they say, Shelley?
Woman of the world? They actually said, "I hope your skis are sharp."
Oh my gosh.
And when you say that at a team captain's meeting, when the officials are saying that, it means that it is extremely slick.
Well, it did look icy.
It's extremely icy.
Extremely icy. So yeah, it sure did. I really like the slalom run for the men though.
So I mean, this is a great run. This is, the course name is Genslem. It is at, start is at 1,004 meters. The end is 811. The vertical drop is 193 meters. The first set was done by Italy, Simone Del Dio, which means of God, which I thought was entertaining.
Wow.
What if you're an atheist? Yeah. That's a little, you got to live up to that one, I guess. But 59 turning gates, 60 gates. A second one was Switzerland, Julien Vignier, 60 gates, 61 turning gates. The temperature was -7 at the start, -6 at the finish. Generally, the snow is classified as being quote unquote hard. It was very hard on these athletes.
In many ways, for sure.
I mean, I think it was interesting. We had Feller's, obviously, kind of a favorite to win this, but Norwegians, like Norway in general, does pretty well, and they've been doing pretty well. And I thought that was interesting that they were kind of considered like a country as contenders coming into this. A lot of people were saying that Norway would do pretty well, and considering as such, they definitely had a rough day. I mean, you look at Daniel Yule, he's won two of the three last World Cup slalom events. Dave Riding had his win here in 2022, and we're always voting for GBR here, right?
Well, so he did have the second fastest second run.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, I think that it would be interesting if you look at, you know, and Maillard is very good from Wengen. Michael Matt was interesting. Strasser, you know, like so you have like quite a few countries, but I found that Norway in particular just a little rough. Think that the surface. So this is an undulating course.
It has a lot of action. It has the steeps. It has the rolls. It's undulating. I love the terrain in this course.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It's got fallaways. It's got bumps. It's got steeps. I 100% agree with you. What did you think about the first set? Because honestly, there was just really a middle section to me that was a little trickier, that had a bit of a knoll where people would go out because they would get just caught behind off of an offset section. And then just if they hipped in at all because of the icy surface, they were out. And I mean, there was 11 DNFs out of the top 30. So, and it was mostly just because of surface, and it didn't allow to be on that inside ski at all.
Well, they did. Some of the stats are normally in the slalom, they usually have about 22 DNFs in the first run. Mm-hmm. This year they had 31 DNFs.
Yep.
That's a big jump. And I think it is related to the iciness of that course.
Yeah. And if you actually looked on the podium, we'll start there. Danielle Yule, Switzerland, Fischer, and Christopher Jakobsen, Sweden, Fischer. I mean, if you look at Fischer, they have, you know, six athletes in the top 20. So obviously the serviceman was doing an extremely good job.
He was getting a nice tip out of those.
He apparently got, you know, the message from the team captain's meeting. That is for sure.
Well, Daniel Yule, so he looked kind of frustrated when he came over the line. Like, it wasn't a yell of happiness. It was like a yell of frustration.
I don't think this was one of those courses where anybody felt good unless they saw a green light coming over that line. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, because it was so icy, you couldn't take a lot of risks the way you would normally. And then because of the terrain, you definitely just nothing. Again, like, I think that this is one of those ones where you're kind of like, oh my God, outside ski. Oh my God.
Yeah. He did say, though, he does love the icy courses. Paid off for him, obviously, coming in third. He was 0.05 out after the first run. Ended up 0.2 out.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the only... I mean, and this is why I said that Norway, you know, had a rough day. Because, I mean, Theodor Brekk in 57 to 25th. Like, just slid in there at 25. Yeah. And then you had... I'm going to screw this one up. Erik Heistad Solberg, who was bib 48, come in 16th, or tie for 16th anyway. 18th. Those were the only two Norwegians, but the favorites, like Atle Lee and Kristoffersen, like they ouskeskiden.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They definitely were. But we had one with almost that same name, Christopher Jakobsen. So he's from Sweden. He did get second. He did win the first run, this young fella. His prior best result this year was an 11th, and he had two DNFs. And he started number 20, so outside the top 15, but he did end up getting second by 0.14.
Right. Oh, I do have to correct myself, though, because Kristoffersen did finish, as I recall. I just remember that he just came in 30th. That's why I was like, oh, he barely made the flip. And then he came 22nd run to come in. Like, he's in the late 20s, which is just not normal for him. He's going to be pissed.
What did you think of who's not pissed, Linus Strasser from Germany? What did you think about his run?
Oh, my God. So his first run coming down, I mean, just... really, again, like smooth on the outside ski, made like one small mistake in the middle section that wasn't even that bad, just ran it a little straight, and then just recovered the line and just did so well, just, you know, just dealing with the terrain. I think he was absolutely fantastic. His second run, same. Like, I didn't see, there wasn't a lot that stood out to me being wrong. He made it look easier.
He did. He was very composed. He was really fluid from edge to edge. He was really good over the terrain. He read those terrain changes really well. just right on top of those knolls. I thought that was amazing. He was in fourth after the first run, and he is 0.4 out. That's hard to make up.
Yeah, and I mean, really, if you're looking at Germany, like, they haven't had a podium here since 2016. So this was a big win for Germany. I mean, those guys were ecstatic.
Yes, and it was exciting to watch, for sure it was. So I think he, I mean, from fourth to first, that's exciting stuff.
Well, and also, if you look at it, he's only 0.14. He only won.
Yeah.
By, it was his race to lose. Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And he had a ripping second run. So his first run, he was fourth. And then his second run, he was first. Like, he sat in that chair just waiting to be overthrown.
Yeah, in the top three, for sure.
And it didn't happen.
Our Canadians had a tough go. Mm-hmm. None of them finished the first run. So they're part of that statistic, unfortunately. Justin Elkier, Liam Wallace, and Eric Reed. So
again, I think you should give them a call.
I will. I'll give the coach a call. They're not listening. We did have one attack from the back that I liked was my favorite, was number 44, finished 12th from France.
Yeah.
Tackle with that. So, I mean, it's there for the taking.
I did find, just to go back a little bit, there was one person that's made a costly error, I think, in my estimation.
Costly error. Picking up what you're laying down.
Yeah. So, Michael Matt straddled bib 17 and kept on skiing. And it was a pretty obvious straddle. Like, I mean, sometimes you kind of come through a gate and you're not really sure if you hit it the wrong way or not, like the tip kind of go, like, did it go on this side or that side of the gate? I'm not sure. This looked pretty obvious. Like, it looked like he should have known. I would be surprised if he does not get fined for this.
Well, someone got fined. Was it not him?
I would bet it was.
I feel like it was another one.
Really?
Like, it was another fella who straddled, kept going, went and sat in the leader's chair. So you didn't hear about this one?
No, I didn't notice.
No, it's quite the controversy. So that dude got fined, whoever the heck it was. But they can't knowingly keep going. That's the rule, is you can't knowingly keep going. So like you said, sometimes it's a little, you're not sure. But generally, you know when you straddle, and that's why they kind of stop. Yeah. But I'm going to find this because... in the results there, it actually said who got fined. So I want to look. Oh, I'm in Schladming. Schladming won't help me. But I'm going to find it. Because they do get fined because they do knowingly.
Nope, it just says disqualified run competitor one. The only one that it is Michael Matt. And he is gate 7, rule 6-9.3. Does not pass through a gate correctly.
Yeah.
So he was the fine. He would have been out.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Now we know. So don't do that, boys and girls.
Nope.
Stop.
And don't throw your poles at the finish either.
I'll go talk to that coach too.
I'm sure they got a talking to. Like, you know how it works. Like, usually you will get someone saying something.
Of course. Of course. Anyway, that's all I got from Kids Fuel.
Yeah, that's all I got in general.
Okay.
So we have a couple of night races coming up this week, and then we're back into the swing of things next weekend.
That's right, we are.
More racing with Shelley and Wendy.
Oh my God.
All right, well, for this week, I've been Shelley.
And I've been Wendy.
Keep your tips up.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Bret Hart didn't get my email. What?
He did not get my email. No, not my email.